Hey there, it's your happy Asian woman host, Alice Chen. Do you know any teens who are feeling overwhelmed with the college admissions process? If so, send them my way. I run Bright Story Admission Consulting, a boutique company that focuses on college application essays. A little about me. I'm a Stanford grad, a professional journalist, and I also coach other essay coaches. I love teaching people how to write, and I'm so thrilled when my students get into schools that they love, like Stanford, MIT, and the UCs. Learn more about my company at brightstory.info. Welcome to Happy Asian Woman, a show to help Asian American women find more joy in love, work, and life. I'm your host, Alice Chen, a professional journalist and entrepreneur. I've also been married for almost 15 years, and I'm the mother of two young girls. If you want to build more community, come join our supportive Facebook group. The link's on my website, www.happyasianwoman.com. Hi, everyone. I'm thrilled to have Dr. Tony Liu on the show today. Dr. Tony is a former OBGYN and current family practice physician. She trained at the Brown 8-year combined undergrad medical program and the University of Michigan. Dr. Tony is also a life coach, and one of her specialties is helping Asian American women get liberated in their sexuality. Dr. Tony runs a shame-free sex ed course. In her course, she helps women discover and embrace their sexuality. She also destigmatizes and busts common sex myths. And finally, she teaches women about respectful relationships and how to assert themselves. I think sex and embracing our sexuality is really important for happiness. But it's funny because I rarely talk about these topics with my friends. I think a lot of us have questions and want to talk about it because every time I mention I'm going to do this interview with Dr. Tony, my girlfriends get really excited about it. So let's get into it. Dr. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Alice. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you could make it. So tell me, why did you create a shame-free sex ed course?
Great question. I'll just try to answer as succinctly as I can. I feel like it's been my life's journey all until now. It's always been forming for me. So it first started, I would say, when I was younger and I felt like I couldn't talk about sex with anyone. I went to a typical public school in New York. I was born in China, but culturally, I just felt like there were so many barriers. There was so much shame and secrecy. It was too embarrassed to talk about it with any friend, much less a family member. Mm-hmm. And my sex ed class was okay, but there was a lot that was missing from it. For example, I didn't even know what erections were for several years and just felt like I had to figure it out myself. And I wish that there was something back then that was medically accurate and reliable and easy to access. So it's really started from there. And then I was really inspired by doing a workshop in my senior year of college called FemSex, for female sexuality, not just for women, there were some men too. But that one, I just felt so liberated to be myself. I felt so empowered. And I just want to pass that on to other people. Before that workshop, I was really afraid to be myself. I was a chameleon and people pleaser. I just was really afraid to just share my voice. And I thought I was too weird. I was always grown up telling you have to just be like everyone else. Mm-hmm. But I just felt so much more like myself after that course. And I know
how did that class do that for you? Liberated you?
It was a semester long. So I think it was definitely a big part of it was having a community of people that I felt I could finally open up to and be myself. It was so safe, so non-judgmental. Yeah. And everyone, the two facilitators were so knowledgeable as well. Mm-hmm. And it just really, just helped me feel like I could do this. And the exercises that they gave us just really helped me get to know myself more and to release that shame, because a lot of times we hold on to shame because of ignorance or lack of awareness.
Yeah.
So, And that all led me to wanting to be a gynecologist in the first place, my interest in sexuality and women's equality and reproductive rights. So I, unfortunately, it was a little bit high stress for me delivering babies. So I changed to family medicine so I could still do the outpatient gyn care. And that's why I added coaching, because unless I'm talking about those specific things, everything else about family medicine doesn't really light me up in that way. So I'm so thrilled that now there's an opportunity to share online everything that I've learned and all the training that I've had. So that's what's brought me to here.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to hear everything. So why do you think that shame-free sexuality is important for happiness and especially for Asian American women?
For sure. I feel like shame-free sexuality is important for everyone's happiness, right? No matter who you are. I feel like sexuality is a part of our humanity. I mean, it's not one of our basic needs, but arguably it could be, because babies do fail to thrive without loving touch. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times sex is linked with love, like not always, but it is something that it just seems so taboo to talk about. And as a result, I feel like so many people get hurt, or they end up doing things that could have been avoided had they just gotten some education about it and in a supportive space. Mm-hmm. So especially for Asian American women, I mean, I think that's a triple whammy. First off, being a woman in society, we have so much pressure to like be seen and not heard and stifle our voices. And then for being Asian as well, that's culturally, we have those expectations sometimes as well, sometimes maybe to be submissive or domestic. And then Americans have the Puritan culture where you have to maintain your purity or your chastity until marriage. So for all those reasons, I feel like it's especially important to embrace your sexuality, because if you hide parts of yourself, then it's hard to truly thrive and be fully happy, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I was going to say, I'm Christian, and I know some of our listeners are also Christian. So you have another layer of this whole, like, there's a lot, it seems like there's a lot of like moral judgment on it, even though I think, of course, the act in and of itself is not, it's totally normal human behavior, but it does seem like a very taboo subject. So thank you for bringing up the Puritan culture aspect. Yes. I agree with you. You mentioned very briefly that you said when people don't know enough about sex and sexuality, they might be doing things that they wouldn't do with more information. Can you elaborate on that? And also, I saw something on your website that said like lack of knowledge can lead to like mental health issues and like suicide or high rates of suicide. Can you tell me more about this information that you just shared?
Of course. Yeah. Oh, there are so many ways. I feel that if people, we're told or taught that sex is bad, then we'll feel this unnecessary shame about it. We'll feel really bad for ourselves, about ourselves. We'll feel bad for having these desires or things that we enjoy. And that just leads to a lot of low self-esteem, low self-worth. We might put ourselves in not so great situations. I think a lot of abuse happens when people don't feel that they're worthy of being treated better, or they don't know better. They don't know how a relationship's supposed to go or how sex is going to go. Mm-hmm. And that to an extreme, when there is so much low self-esteem, self-worth, and sometimes people, it's so painful for them that the only way out that they see is suicide, ending their life. A lot of people don't want to, but if it's so painful that they can't think of any other way out. I'm actually really passionate about mental health as well. So I love that I can intersect these two needs with this program.
So part of what you're, I mean, I think part of it that you're also alluding to is what it means to be in a healthy relationship.
Yes.
It's tied definitely. To all of this. Yeah. I mean, I think there's very little education about that too.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Right. What to look for, so unhealthy patterns. And it is weird because those things are so foundational to our happiness and our wellness to know what healthy relationships are like.
Mm-hmm, so, definitely.
Very interesting. So how do you, your course covers how teaching people how to discover and embrace their sexuality without shame. What are some of your favorite exercises, or how do you help people do that?
Yeah. Oh, there are so many ways, and each and everyone's different. So different exercises or techniques would be more effective for some rather than others, but a lot of it is really just self-awareness first off, and then really finding out getting to the root of why we feel shame. Like, where did it come from? Was it ancestrally passed down onto us? Is it cultural? And then really gently challenging it, like almost putting ourselves out. One of my favorite exercises actually is, if you imagine you were a man or you were of some other culture, how would you act? How would you be? And just, if you do feel very different, then you just ask yourself, well, we're all human. Why do they get to do this and I don't? So because I really do think the foundation is just everyone should be treated with a certain level of respect and kindness, no matter what. So I like that one. And then also another way I help people just to see that sex, there's nothing dirty about it. It's just a form of loving yourself. Pleasure is not a bad thing. I think many cultures ingrained it in us that life's supposed to be hard, life's supposed to be suffering, and there's no room anymore for play once you're an adult. And just really rewiring those deeply set beliefs and challenging them. Like, just because you're told that doesn't mean you need to believe it. That's what a lot of coaching is about. It's just going in and changing those beliefs, because once you do, then it really affects so many other areas of your life.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I like that exercise about imagining whether you were male or of another race. And I think that could actually apply in so many different areas of our lives. Yep. Like, prior to this, we were just talking about coaching and business and entrepreneurial skills and how things would be different, I think, if we came at it with a different perspective. So thank mm-hmm. you for sharing that. And this is kind of like a similar question, but again, I think so many of us are taught that sex is bad or it's taboo when we're growing up. And then all of a sudden, after we get married, we're supposed to be like amazing in the bedroom and enjoy it and, you know, have sex every day or multiple times a day, or I don't know what people do. I'm not doing that. But how do you change people's mindsets if they've been taught this way for like decades of their lives and then to have a shift?
Yeah. So first off, it's really, really hard. You think of how many years that you've had that old mindset. It can sometimes take just as long or even longer to shift to the new one.
But
every bit does count. It's really just stopping it in its tracks first. Yeah. It's especially in our culture, Asian culture, it's just like, yeah, you're like, no dating, right?
Right,
like, no dating
right.
until you finish all your schooling, yes. your graduate degree too. And then all of a sudden, why are you not married yet?
where are the babies, right?
Right,
totally.
Where are the babies? Completely unrealistic expectations for that. So, and I know each person is different. Some people just, they do choose to not date or not have sex before marriage. They really want to keep that sacred for their person. When they do marry, and others are just like, well, I want to test the car before I drive it. So then they do date and experiment, and both ways work well. Like, both, whatever, however someone wants to pursue it is entirely their choice, and they should feel free and empowered to do whatever speaks to them. I do think that sex is a skill to be learned, but it's not something that you necessarily need to practice with a partner. I do think that self, knowing yourself well, knowing what you find sexy or arousing or interesting to you, would help a lot in when you are finally doing it with a partner, which can be after marriage too. So I think that there's a lot that we can do on our own to really practice that. And the more that well that we know ourselves, then the better we're able to guide others. There's that old quote that says, well, if you don't love yourself, who will? Or you don't know how to love yourself, how can you show someone else? It just makes it a lot more smooth, the process, I think. So reframing that is just, it's just practice, and no one's expected to be, yeah, you know, like those in erotica or porn. Just the women are so different from how it actually is. They're putting on performances. And I think that contributes too to these unrealistic expectations, mm-hmm. what it's actually like. But there's a movement now that there's a website called Make Love, Not Porn. And it's a little more realistic portrayals of sexual encounters.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. What are some common sex myths that you have destigmatized, or even like as a physician, what are some of the things that you're finding people get really inaccurate?
Yeah, there's so many. Oh my gosh, what to pick first? Well, one big one is that women feel ashamed or bad that they can't orgasm from intercourse, or that even that they might not enjoy intercourse that much, just mm-hmm. penis and vagina, because the vagina has some nerve endings, but not as much as, say, the clitoris, which is located in a different area, and it's not always stimulated during intercourse. In fact, only 30% of women can actually have an orgasm. That's mm-hmm. such a low amount, and yet we feel so much pressure to have intercourse be the most enjoyable thing ever, and it's just not true.
I want to pause here. Only 30% of women can have an orgasm during intercourse.
Yes, from vaginal stimulation alone.
Got it.
Yes, a lot of times during intercourse, if you use a certain angle or you do other things with your hands, you can actually stimulate the clitoris. Mm-hmm. And yeah, actual orgasm rates are definitely higher than 30%.
Yeah.
But it's just from vaginal stimulation alone. A lot of us aren't wired that way. Uh-huh. The clitoris is the equivalent of the penis. So yeah. that definitely has a ton of nerve endings. And that's mm-hmm. what's meant. It's purely for pleasure. So yeah. that's a big one that I see. And there are a lot of other health myths out there as well. People not knowing what HPV exactly is. Mm-hmm. Is it an STD? What does an abnormal pap smear mean? Mm-hmm. What myths about the morning after pill. Mm-hmm. So I just find that HPV. Recently I had a patient ask me, well, I don't know if men can have it. And I explained to her, oh, it's because men don't have a test for it yet. Mm-hmm. We're still developing that. So it's really hard to trace where you got it from. Mm-hmm. But also that HPV isn't the end of the world, that 25% of Americans have it at any given time. It's a virus that mm-hmm. can be cleared by most bodies. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, the certain types can increase your risk of cervical cancer. So just so many things like that. I wish I could just package everything and just distribute these myth busting books to everyone.
You should. Ebook.
Yes, yes, I will. I will put that together. Well, right now I have some handouts on my website, but yes, ebook's a great idea.
Yeah. No, I saw the clitoris diagram on your website and I found it so fascinating. I had no idea how it goes into your legs and all that stuff, you know? And
oh yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah. I definitely learned from your website and the diagrams and everything. And I totally agree. And you made it so accessible, and I love your style of writing and just how it's so understandable. So oh,
thank you.
Thank you. Do you think that there are higher rates of unhealthy relationships in Asian or Asian American culture? I've always been curious about that because I feel like anecdotally, especially in my parents' generation, which was more immigrant and, you know, born in the 40s, 50s, it seemed like more prevalent. I don't know if that was an immigration thing or it's an Asian culture thing, but I feel like even in Asian media, like Korean dramas or Chinese stuff, I feel like the relationships are more tumultuous and it's treated like in a joking manner, like when people are fighting and throwing things or things we would consider would be like domestic abuse mm-hmm. is kind of like normalized and ha-ha'd. I mean, what are there any numbers on this or any stats, or what is your understanding?
That's a great question. I'm not aware of the exact statistics
of
that, but I would suspect it is quite high. And especially, I think a lot due to the cultural reasons. I know that my family, we never speak of divorce. Like that's just not an option. So I think when people feel trapped into relationships that are not, they can't even leave, they feel because of having children or financial reasons or just the shame of maintaining the image of an intact family. Mm-hmm. So it just leads to people settling for terrible behaviors, abusive behaviors. And you're right. The more drama there is, then the more that you normalize it. Yeah. I know with Asians and how they treat their children, like there's spanking, there's some physical discipline, but that would not fly at all here in Western culture.
Yeah. I had to turn off some Korean dramas where they were like, parents were chasing the kids around for not fulfilling their expectations. And it was like played to funny music. And, you know, it's just too triggering for me.
Yeah. It's too close to home.
Yeah. It's very upsetting. What are common tools to make relationships healthier? Like, what have you observed? What are some of the top tips you think people need to be looking out for from your experience and what you've heard and what works for your students?
Great question. Well, I think one thing is definitely being aware of red flags. It's like a behavior that really, like, just knowing what your boundaries are and just communicating that right at the root, because if you allow it to happen, it will just over time get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And then you might even start doubting yourself.
That's true.
Some abusers even blame the victim, just saying you're too sensitive. And then just the more that you're in that, and then the harder it is to get out. So that's one thing that I just teach people to just like, and check in with your body, see how you feel. If someone is not making you feel good or nourished or supportive, pay attention to that. Don't try to override it. A lot of times our body knows before our brains can catch up, our minds can catch up on that. And of course, healthy relationships require a lot of communication. I think there's also a myth about relationships, really, is that lovey-dovey feeling should be there all the time, be sustained throughout the years. And if it's not there, then you're no longer in love, or this is the wrong person. But that's just part of the honeymoon phase. It's wonderful. It's that infatuation, romantic love. But then after that, you have a different sort of love. And it does require some nourishing and tending to that relationship garden to keep it alive. I think some people just conclude this must be the wrong person, or we've grown apart, and just give up at that point.
Yeah. Great, wise tips. No, I totally agree with you. And I think, I'm going to leave it at that. I'm still digesting. So we talked a little bit about self-love and pleasure. What exercises do you have for self-love? I think you talked a little bit about the self-pleasuring part. Tell me more about how you help people love themselves.
Yeah, definitely. There are so many ways. One thing is, well, a lot of people sometimes don't feel good about themselves because of their bodies. So I have a whole week and area dedicated to cultivating that body love, just feeling comfortable in your skin, and doing some deep journaling exercises. And I know it sounds silly, but affirmations do work to an extent, especially if they're personalized, just going through and pointing out, picking out the things that you do love or that you feel okay about, and to slowly move up from there. I created a body map too for people to circle what they love and how they feel, and also a different one, a body pleasure map. I encourage them to experiment and just see what feels good for them without any expectation. It's just all part of getting to know yourself. Another one I love is having people take themselves on a date. Pamper yourself, pamper all your senses. Sensuality and sexuality are just so linked. I think sensuality is broader. It's really just enjoying all of your senses in all the ways, and really living your fullest, most vibrant and juiciest life ever, is what I just hope to empower all of the people I work with to get to that point. So just other things like mindfulness, practicing some mindfulness, connecting daily, having a sensuality practice or routine, and really just put you into that mode. There are a lot of great exercises out there. And then if people are creative, then have them draw or create music. I love body movement. I find that really brings out this different side of me. And so I've also learned and choreographed some Zumba style classes called Love Yourself dance classes that I've taken some others through. And it's all to get us out of our mind and all the judgments that we have about ourselves and just be more in our hearts, drop into our hearts. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting because I also feel like a lot of Asian culture and Asian American culture is so intellectual. Like we value mm-hmm. book knowledge, studying, like skills, like piano and all that stuff, but we're not really knowing ourselves and our own personal likes and dislikes and just mm-hmm. like getting into the physical world. It's, I feel like our culture is much more intellectual than residing in our bodies and embracing our senses and sensuality. So I love that. That's such, those are great ideas. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we have time for in this episode. Join us next time when we discuss how to attract people, embrace your sensuality, and enjoy and improve your sex life. Talk to you soon.